Good morning. Today we're going to begin the sugya of a chazaka for mitzvahs and srara. And although the topic is talking about chazaka, if a particular person has been doing one mitzvah for a period of time, what are his rights? Under what conditions can the public remove him, give a mitzvah to someone else? As we're going to see, many of these halachas are general halachas that will apply in general managing the public affairs, how it should be done. It's somewhat ironic that the basis for some of these halachas is Mishum Darkei Shalom. These are rules that were instituted to avoid machlokes. These are rules that were instituted just to keep things masudr, to stop people from contesting and fighting over these matters. Unfortunately, today it is not uncommon for there to be significant machlokes in these issues. But again, as we're going to see, that is certainly not the goal of these halachas. One of the reasons why there is so much machlokes and confusion about it is there are really three separate sugyos that we're going to have to learn. And even these sugyos are broken up into different pieces. There's one issue of chazaka with a mitzvah, in mitzvahs. If a person is noyig to do a mitzvah regularly, every year he gets an aliyah on Rosh Hashanah, he's muchzik to do a particular mitzvah. So the question is, at what point do we say he has ownership? He has bailus, he cannot be removed, he cannot be stopped from doing this mitzvah. And that's the first concept. The second concept that we'll have to deal with is the concept of a srara. Putting aside the chazaka of a mitzvah per se, there's a concept of a srara. The simplest case is when you anoint a king cannot be fired. It's a position that's his for life, and it's called Esrara. And the Poskim extend this concept. It's not just by a king, it's not just by a Kohen Gadol, it's by many other public positions, positions of power, positions of Kavod. There's an idea that Esrara is something which is given indefinitely, and therefore, under certain conditions, certain types of positions, you cannot remove a person unless there is real cause. The third concept is even when you're dealing with a case of a srara, you're dealing with a position, or in a case where a person has a chazaka, he has the right to continue doing this particular mitzvah, what happens when he passes away? Does he have the right, does this position pass to his children, Yerusha? And if so, what are the gedorim? It's certainly not a Yerusha where you can take the position and divide it among his children and give a bechor pishnayim. So we have to determine when there is the idea of Yerusha and how this Yerusha plays itself out. So these are the three general concepts. Today we're going to begin with the first concept, the idea of a chazaka with mitzvahs. And our discussion is, at what point does a person take vilas? At what point does a person have the right to say, I've been doing this mitzvah in the past, I have the right to continue doing this, and no one can take this away from me. So the first makar for this concept is Mishnah in Gittin, Daf Nun Tes, the first of the Ma'ariv Makarim we have today. And this Mishnah is listing cases of Darkei Shalom. This Mishnah is listing examples of takanos that Chazal instituted, not Nekar Hadin, but Mishnah Darkei Shalom to avoid fights. The Mishnah begins with Elu Dvarim Amru B'nei Darkei Shalom, Koyin Koyin Berishon V'Achrav Levi V'Achrav Yisrael. You have aliyahs to give out. The Kohen comes first, the Levi comes second, the Yisrael comes last. And this is Mishum Darkei Shalom. Again, the Gemara discusses why you need it, why it's not Dereisa. But the idea is, these are takanos, these are rules that are instituted in order to avoid machlokes. Next example in the Mishnah, and this is what we will focus on, is Ma'arvin Bebayis Yashem Mipnei Darkei Shalom. That when you have an Eruv Chatzeros, the halacha is on Shabbos, you can carry Nershus HaYachid, you cannot carry Nershus HaRabim. If you have a number of houses, a number of Nershus HaYachid, that open up into one common courtyard, it's private property, but it's owned but collectively by the people by the homeowners in the Chatzar. So for them to carry, they have to make an Erev Chatzeros, they have to all put together some bread, some food together in one central area, and that combines the Rishus, so to say, and makes it into one big Rishus Hayachid. So everyone takes their bread, their matzah, and pools it together. and they have to put it somewhere. Zok the Mishnah, if there's a bayis yashon, if the Eruv was kept in one particular location, then that is where the Eruv stays. And year after year after year, each time they make the Eruv, they have to continue putting the Eruv in this same house. The reason for this is mipnei dakei shalom. There's no real right that this person has to keep it there. But mishum dakei shalom, in order to avoid machlokes, since it was put by him in the past, you continue putting it in the same house, you don't change things. Anytime you change things, that is already cause for machlokes. Now the Gemara questions, what is this dakei shalom over here? So the Gemara says, my time, ilei mishum kavod. If the reason is that it is a kavod to have the Erev in your house, it's a kavod. People want it. So for some reason, they feel good and they feel important that the Erev is being kept in their location. The Gemara says that can't be. Because ahi shipura dehava meikara be Rav Yehuda, lubsaif be Rabba, lubsaif be Rav Yosef, lubsaif be Abaya, lubsaif be Rav. The Gemara says there was a shofar. Either this means the money that they was get for tzedakah, or it means the shofar that they used to blow on Erev Shabbos. But either case, it was something that was used by the public, and it was passed from one house to the next, from one Rosh Yeshiva to the next. As one took over, he would pass it along to the new Rosh Yeshiva. So the Gemara is saying that if Mishum Darkei Shalom, whenever there's anything that involves kavod, then it's got to stay where it is. We can't change it because it'll cause machlokes. People will fight over the kavod. Then this halacha should apply to this shofar or this keren tzedakah as well. How can you pass it on from one Rosh Yeshiva to the next? If it is a kavod, it should stay there, it should stay in the family. Even after the Rosh Yeshiva passed away, his children should yashin that tzedakah because it is a matter of kavod. So Gemara says, Elamai, it must be mishum chashad. The reason why we do not switch the Erev is that if we switch the Erev from one person's house to the next, that will cause a chashad, and that is what we're coming to avoid. Now there's a machlokes rishonim how to understand this chashad. Rashi learns this is a very localized problem by an Erev. If every year they kept the Erev in this particular house, so anyone who comes into the Chatzar knows that the Erev Chatzeres was kept in this location. If one Shabbos they come in and they see the Erev is not there, and nevertheless people are busy carrying, they're going to be choshed the people in this Chatzar, they don't have an Erev and they're still carrying. So the chashad is on the bnei hachatzar. An outsider won't realize that the Erev was moved. He will think there is no Erev. And that's why mishum chashad, they were goyzer, you have to keep it in the same bayis. So Taisus has a different shot. Taisus says the chashad over here does not mean people will accuse the public of carrying without an Erev. The chashad is that what is an Erev? An Erev is everyone takes their bread, takes their matzah, and puts it together in this one person's house. If for years it was in this person's house, and suddenly the public decides to move it to another person's house, people are going to say, we can't trust the uncle anymore with the bread. He gets hungry, he's going to eat it. He's not trustworthy. And therefore, people are going to think that the reason why it was switched was mishum chashad, because the original place, the original landlord was not trustworthy, and that's why it was switched. Because of this chashad, because people will come to accuse him of, or think, or this is a proof that he cannot be trusted. Therefore, Mishum Dakei Shalom is a takana. Once the Erev is in one person's house, you cannot move it. We do not want to create a situation of machlokes, of chashad, and that's why we keep it in the original location. Based on this halacha, Ma'arit discusses the following case. It's where a person had a shul in his house. Everyone used to come daven in his shul. And this continued on for a number of years, until Vayihi Hayoyim, someone decided that, listen, it's a beautiful thing to have a shul in your house, so you've had it for a number of years, now it's my turn. I'm going to finish my basement, I'm going to set aside a place, and let everyone come and daven by me. First person said, no, the shul's been in my house for many years, I want it to continue being in my house. So this question came to Ma'arik in Shairish Kuf Yud Gimel. And Ma'arik paskined that the first person is right based on our Gemara. Starts off and he says a number of beautiful chedusha. He says, what's the case of the Erev? The Erev is in one person's house. Now we want to switch it. Mishum chashad, because it will cause people to have to suspect the first person, we don't do it. Zakhmar Rick, what was the case? Why did they want to switch it in the first place? Was there a reason? Or did someone just wake up one day and say, I want the Eruv? Zakhmar Rick Chiddush, it must be there was a reason. And again, he has a riot from the first part of the Gemara. Because he says, if there was no reason, you don't need a Mishnah, you don't need a Takana to tell you, Mishum Dakei Shalom, you can't switch. If there's no reason, if this is the way it's been done until now, it was in this person's house, they did it in one particular way, stop without a reason to take it away from someone you can't do. Because this is the way it's been until now. If the status quo, whoever's house it is wants it to remain, unless it's a legitimate reason, we don't go ahead and stop change things. So that's the first chiddush of Ma'ariv. If there's no taina, if there's no benefit for switching, we don't need any chidushim, we don't need any takanos, we don't need any makairos. He says that's a svara be'alma. When you're dealing with a public matter, without a reason to change, you leave it the way it is. That's the first you say of the Marek. Elamai, the Marek continues, there must have been some particular reason why there was a benefit to switch. It made sense. It made sense to move it to another house, whatever the reason may be, but there was some sort of reason. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says, Mishum Darkei Shalom, it's true there might be some benefit to the cloud, there might be some benefit to the public, but since by taking it away, the person who had it originally is going to be fall under suspicion, people will be choshed him, therefore we do not take it away. And the public will lose out on whatever this benefit is, Mishum Chashad, we do not want to hurt the person who is hosting it until now. Zok Marik, the same way this is true about where to put an Erev, this applies as well to a shul. If until now the shul was in one person's house, and now you want to move it, even if you have some sort of reason, the new shul is a somewhat nicer location, it's a more beautiful shul, there's a reason for it. But nevertheless, because now there'll be chashad, people will think, they moved the shul out of this first person's house, he wasn't a good host, he wasn't an Erlo Chayid, people didn't feel comfortable davening in his house. There was now he'll be under a cloud of suspicion. And therefore, even if there is somewhat of a reason, we do not take it away from the first person and we leave it there. Now Rick also adds, even without chashad, he said, since there's a benefit to having a shul in your house, it's a very convenient location, you don't have to travel very far. He said, just like we find that Mishum Chashad, if there is a reason why the first person is losing, we do not take away the error from him. So it does not have to be suspicion. He says, Hu Hadin, if there's another reason, for example, it's more convenient to be in his house. So Hu Hadin over there, if he had it until now, we do not take it away. We leave it by the first person. If it's too small, so my Rick is clear. He's the way he says it is, if there's a tainuk tzas to move it, we cannot move it. Because it's chashad. However, the Achronim are all medayik from my Rick. If there's a very good reason, then you could move it. If it's too small, if a public outgrew the place, there clearly is a very good reason, you'd have the right to move it. How far to go, what is considered just a tam tzas and what's considered a very good reason is obviously open to debate. There are, again, different tshuvas that talk about different examples, but clearly if there's a compelling reason, you could move. There are actually two reasons or two explanations for it. The first is, if you go with Mishum Chashad, if the whole reason why you don't move the Erev or you don't move the Shul is because there'll be a suspicion, people will think you moved it out because the host is no longer trustworthy. So that's very nice if you move it out without a compelling reason. But if people outgrew the Shul, if there's a very obvious and compelling reason to find another location, then there would not be any Chashad because it's self-evident why they had to find another location. As far as Ma'arik's other reason, where he doesn't need chashad, he says, in fact, convenience itself is a reason to give the first person a right. So here already there's another argument. And that is, that the mission, what are we talking, let's take a step back. Why do we leave it by the first person? Is it a real schus? Does he have a bailus? Does he have an ownership? No. This is all Mishum Darkei Shalom. This is all takana to avoid machloikas. So in the Mishnah, we only see that if we want to know where to put the bread, do we put it in this house or in the next house? So Mishnah Darkei Shalom, and we leave it in the original house. But in a case where there's a compelling reason to move it, where the tzibur or people have a hefse, it doesn't have to be financial, but there's a significant problem or benefit to moving it, so there we do not see the Darkei Shalom went that far. We do not see, because of this takana, we cause hefseidim to the tzibur. It's only when there is some sort of minor reason we say keep it the way it is. But when there's a big difference, when there's a compelling reason, there already the place can say this halacha of chashad and this halacha of Darkei Shalom would not apply. Okay, so we're starting off over here with this idea of chashad, this idea of Darkei Shalom. We're going to also have to deal with the concept of a chazaka with mitzvahs. There are going to be other areas that we're going to have to address. But what we're focusing on right now is the idea of chashad, that if you've been doing it until now, if we take it away from you, then people will suspect it's because you weren't worthy of it, you weren't trustworthy anymore. Now this Ma'arik is a tremendous chiddush. Because what Ma'arik is doing is he's taking a very localized takana. All the Mishnah tells us is we want to know where to put an Erev, there's a takana, Mishum Darkei Shalom, keep it in the old house. The Ma'arik is saying this is not just a localized takana. Ma'arik is taking this and extending it to any area of public life. That if you have a shul and until now it was here, and now you want to move it to a different location, this concept of Darkei Shalom applies, this concept of chashad applies, and the original owner, the original host can say, I don't want to change because either it'll be chashad or because there'll be some sort of other reason. Ma'arik comes out is extending it to any time where you're dealing with a public matter, where until now there was one host, there was one person that had the Erev in his house or a shul in his house, switching it away, we will always have to deal with this problem of chashad. Now it is clear, this is only when you're dealing in the public domain. If you go on vacation, and before you leave, you have your computer, you go knock on a neighbor's door, you ask them to please watch it. And you do that a few times. The next year, you go on vacation again, and you go to the neighbor, your other neighbor, and say, please, can you watch my computer? The first neighbor cannot say, no, I want to be the shomer. Because it's chashad. Until now, whenever you left, you trusted me. Now you're giving it to someone else. It's chashad. So that is clearly not a taina. That's because an individual can do whatever he wants with his items. This, what we're dealing over here is with a tzibur. When you're dealing with, there's a chatzar, everyone, there has to be a communal Erev in some sort of location. So over here, once there's one location, it's in one house, you can't go ahead and switch it unless there's a very compelling reason, mishum chashad. If there's a shul, everyone's davening here, switching it, we have this din of ma'arik, we have this din of chashad. But in a private person, certainly he can do what he wants, and certainly this halacha would not apply. Excuse me?
What kind of chashad?
In the case of the Erev, the chashad, according to Tosis, is that people are going to think that the host is going to eat the Erev. We can't trust him with the bread. He'll get hungry one day, he'll eat it. In the case of the shul, the Ma'arik says there's a tzas chashad because people are going to think that the reason why they moved the shul is that this host was no longer worthy to have a shul in his house. Now Rick adds that even without chashad, he says you can come up with other reasons. Since it's more convenient to the host to have it in his house, he has the same argument from Darkei Shalom, the same way Darkei Shalom says that if there's chashad, leave it by me. If there's any other reason or benefit that the landlord has, he can also say Mishum Darkei Shalom, do not take it away from me. Now the truth is the Aruch HaShulchan argues. The Aruch HaShulchan says, he agrees with the Ma'arik that this takana was not only by Erev. You can extend it to a shul, you can extend it to other area. However, he says, we only find a takana mishum chashad. If you're doing a mitzvah, you're doing something, and now we want to take it away, and people will suspect that it's mishum chashad, we're taking it away from you because you're no longer trustworthy, then we have a takana of Darkei Shalom. But in a case where there's no chashad, there's no one's going to accuse you of anything, there's no, whatever's being taken away is not something that will cause any suspicion. But you come in with other arguments, like it's more convenient, you want to keep it simply because it's closer, you want it in your house, it's added for convenience. On that point, the Aruch HaShulchan argues, and he says, that we don't find anywhere that we can extend the takana that far. So the Aruch HaShulchan agrees it's not only a din in Erev. He says we have to invoke this halacha, we have to find chashad, we have to find suspicion. Other reasons, such as convenience, will not be enough for the first person to be able to, this writer, this kadima. Now this takana, this idea of chashad, is only l'charchiva. If we have an Erev in one person's house, and someone comes and says, I want it, or if there's a shul in one location and someone comes along and says, I'd like the shul moved to my house. So mishum dake shalom, the halacha is we do not move. What happens after the fact? If they went ahead and they moved the Erev to a second location, if they actually moved the shul away, so over here the Achroidim speak out, after the fact there's no recourse. While if it was a schus mamon, and we'll discuss later, if a concept of srara or a chazaka, if it's something that became yours, if it gets taken away shlokedin, many cases you will have the right to claw it back. But over here, since it's not really yours, it's not really a right, it's just a takana mishum darkei shalom, that is just a hanhaga l'chachila. Don't take it away, don't chaper him, don't cause him to be choshed. But if they've already done it, to go ahead and to say, now I want to reverse it, I want to take it back, that you would not have the right to do. Now lastly, this idea of Erev, the lashon of Mishnah is ma'arvin bebayis yasha. We put the Erev in an old house. Now what does it mean in an old house? So the discussion over here is not when the house was built. The point over here is it's yashon, that the Erev has been kept here regularly for a long period of time. Since it was always here, and now you're trying to switch it, now we have a problem of chashad, now we have a problem of darkei shalom. However, if it was just done once or twice or a few times, so there the concept of chashad doesn't apply. Because chashad is only if everyone expects it, it's kavua, it was always here, and there's a switch, there's a change. So the change already brings up questions. Why did people suddenly switch things around? So there, people will draw their own conclusions. There is chashad. But if it's only once or twice, it wasn't kavua, it wasn't regular, here this halacha will not apply. And again, this is important. This is because while this is true by chashad, we're going to see some of the other halachas that we'll discuss kick in a lot quicker and have much more rigid rules. But here, what the important point is it here regularly tadir kavua yashlan, the different lashonis in the paiskim, where if there's a change, people already will say something must have happened, something must have gone wrong. If they switched it away, there must be some good reason. One last point before we move on to the next makar is, let's just go back for a moment. The case of the Mishnah is we have an Erev Chatzeres, and you have to put it somewhere. So once in one house regularly, if someone comes and says, I want to move it, Mishum Dakar Shalom, you can't. Are we discussing here a mitzvah? Is it a mitzvah to have an Erev in your house? So the Achroinim struggle with this. L'chayr, although it's a mitzvah to make an Erev, but whose house the Erev is sitting in, l'chayr, is not a mitzvah. So the different Malkiel comes up with a chiddush. He says it is a mitzvah, and therefore he was saying this halacha applies only by mitzvahs. But other Achroinim argue. They say there is no mitzvah to have an Erev in your house over another house. The other examples of Gemara having the shofar they blew on Erev Shabbos is also, there's no mitzvah to have the shofar in your house. And therefore they say, even though it's not a mitzvah, per se, even it's a matter of kavod, whatever it may be, it's possible to have a chashad if you move it, these rites will apply. So this is not limited to a mitzvah per se. It's any time the public did something, it was in this person's house, he was the one that did it, and you're going to switch it. People may suspect you, even if we're not talking about a mitzvah, this right, this inyan of chashad, will kick in. So this is the first concept. It's chashad. It's not a right per se. It's not a schus. It's not yours. It's just a hanhaga. The public, if they've done things one way until now, if by switching it they will hurt the first person in any way, the tzibur is not allowed to switch it. The next maramakim to go through for these inyanim is the Mordechai. Now the Mordechai in Bava Basra and Tav Kuf Lamed Gimel, and it's quoted by the Ramban Chosh and Mishpat in Simen Kuf Memtes. So what the Ramban and the Mordechai are talking about, it's the Mordechai actually discusses it We'll go through what the Mordechai says, and then we'll have to work backwards to figure out what the yesod or what the makar of this halacha is. Mordechai starts off with a case where a person was rogel, he had a particular mitzvah. He always did glila. Glila was the chash of a mitzvah that everyone fought over back then. Or whatever, the Ramah is a case where he had a Sefer Torah, and his Sefer Torah was the one that the tzibur always used to lane from. He always had the right to do it. And ve'ehi hayoyim, someone else came along and someone else started doing the mitzvah. The first person came and said, you have to give it back to me. This is my mitzvah, it was mine, I've been doing this for many years. I have a chazakah, no one has the right to take it away from me, and give it back. The second person claimed, again, there are different cases, the second person said that, no, now I'm doing the mitzvah, it belongs to me. So the Mordechai has a whole shakavataria, a whole back and forth. And he deals with this question in the context of Hilchus Chazakah. Now, normally chazakah means a person lives in a field, a fellow knocks on his door one day and says, this house belongs to me. The person who's there, who's mochzik, says, no, I bought it from you. The owner says, no, you didn't. So what's the halacha when they have a machlokes? So there's a concept of chazakah. If the fellow has proof that he bought it, it'll be his. But if he doesn't have any proof, he doesn't have any shtar. So if he was there for 3 years, he has a cheskes gimel shanim, then he keeps the house. We assume he bought it, he just lost the shtar. If he was there for less than 3 years, we give it to the marikama, we give it to the original owner, and we say, since there's no proof that it changed hands, it belongs to the first person. A similar concept of chazakah is found by cheskes teshmishim. We find certain cases, if you have neighbors and you have someone starts doing something, he opens up the window, he's using his property in a way that impacts you. So then, once he does that, even though he's not claiming that he explicitly bought it, but if he has a cheses teshmisha, if he's using his property in a way that impacts you, that you have the right to stop, and you don't make a macha, you allow him to do it. So again, there are different shitas over when it happens, but at some point you get a chazakah. We assume that if the neighbor didn't object, the neighbor didn't say anything, he allowed you to use your property in a way that impacts him, in a way that he'd have the right to stop you. At some point we say that he was moichel, and he loses his right to object in the future. The Mordechai, in this discussion of who has the right to this mitzvah, applies dinei chazakah. He starts saying, what's the case? If the second person already had a chazakah, he already did this mitzvah for 3 years, or whatever the zman chazakah is, and now someone's, the original owner or the original person who had the mitzvah is making a macha and saying it was always mine, we say, we're sorry. You waited too long. The other fellow has a chazakah. We assume that it passed over to him. However, if there was no way to chazakah, if the first owner came right away and claimed that this is always my mitzvah, I want it back, then we give it to him. Then the Mordechai continues. He says, we also have to look at whether it was an oinus or not. What were the circumstances where the second person got the mitzvah? Now, before we go further into the details of Hilchus Chazakah, what we see clearly from the Mordechai is that we're not dealing over here with chashad. If the only reason, the Mordechai is assuming that if you did a mitzvah for a period of time, there's a concept of owning the right to do that mitzvah. And it's an ownership that if we want to know whether you still have that ownership or what happens when someone else comes and takes it away, we open up a choshen mishpat. These are dealt with like the regular dine mamonis, regular dine chazakah. Clearly, this has nothing to do with the sugi of chashad that we just learned. Chashad has nothing to do with chazakah, nothing to do with ownership, nothing to do with schosim, nothing to do with macha. Chashad is a takana. That we, if one person did a, was the host, we don't want to take it away from him in a way that will hurt him. The Mordechai is introducing a concept that when a person did a mitzvah regularly, he owns that mitzvah. It's his. It's his source. It's his right. And in the absence of some sort of proof that he gave it away, in the absence of some sort of proof that he gave it up, he gave it to the second person, or he was mafker it, then he has the right to come back years later even, and say, this was always my mitzvah, give it back to me, it's mine. Nothing to do with chashdan. Here already we're talking about a bailus. We're talking about owning the right to do the mitzvah. Good. So that's the Mordechai's point. That if you had it, if you always did the mitzvah, now you stopped. Someone else took over, and you were quiet. You didn't make a macha. And there's a chazakah, however long the chazakah needs to be. At that point, you'll lose it. But that's, again, going with dinei chazakah, dinei mamonis. This is clearly not a point of chashad. This is a schus, this is something that you own, and therefore it has to be, it can only be taken away from you with the right proof. Exactly. It's not a kasha on the Mordechai and the Gemara. But one point is, there are two completely different concepts. What we'll have to deal with ba'arichos is why you need each concept and where one applies and where the other one will apply. That we'll get to at the end after we have all of the different yesoidus and tainus that there are. But my point is that the Mordechai and the Gemara Gittin are two separate things. Gittin is chashad. It may not even be a mitzvah. You point out that's a machlokes. The Mordechai is talking about a mitzvah. Now, the question is, in this Mordechai, what is this right to do a mitzvah? How did you get it in the first place? So the Ramah says that your original argument that I have a chazakah to do this mitzvah has to be a chazakah sheyesh imatayna. Now, normally chazakah sheyesh imatayna means you have to argue that the tzibur sold it to me. I bought the rights to do this mitzvah olam vod. That would be chazakah sheyesh imatayna. Otherwise, if you say, I just did it for the past few years, what kind of ownership does that give you? The Achroinim understand that Chazak HaSheishim Matayna cannot mean literally that you're claiming that Tzibur sold it to you. Again, it just doesn't work out in the Cheshbon of the Mordechai or the Rambam. They say is, you don't need that you actually bought it. But if in any situation where you did the mitzvah regularly, and the tzibur allowed you to do it, they allowed you to take ownership, to take possession of this mitzvah, that it was yours, in that case, that will become a chazakah, and the tzibur will not be able to change their mind later. Essentially, in certain circumstances, if you did this mitzvah time and time again, at some point we say the tzibur was moichel you, they gave it over to you, they allowed you to take it for yourself, and once it becomes your mitzvah, it's yours. And until you decide to give it up, until you decide you're not interested in doing it and voluntarily allow someone else to come in, this mitzvah cannot be taken away from you. In this type of right, the tzibur gave you this mitzvah, it's yours, you have a schus to continue doing it. If someone comes shaloi kedin and takes it away from you, you have every right to come to Beis Din and take it back. By chashad, we said that's only a takana, it's only dakar shalom, it's only before the fact. But over here, we were dealing with a schus, we're dealing with a right to continue doing the mitzvah. This is even b'diyeved, this is a right that cannot be taken away from you. And if it is taken away from you, you'll have the right to come to Bezin, you'll have the right to demand it back whenever you're able to get it. Now, along comes the Darkei Moshe and makes a very important chiluk. Because the question, fundamental question that we have here is, at what point do we say, just because a person did a mitzvah, that tzibur gave it to him, it became his? How quick do we jump to conclusions? When do we say there is stam and mechila? So the Darkei Moshe deals with the following case. There was a shul, and it was a small shul, and there was one Sefer Torah. Now, if there's only one Sefer Torah, what are they laying from each and every week? This one Sefer Torah that they had. And everything worked out wonderfully. Vayihi hayoyim, someone came along and donated a second Sefer Torah. They make a big party, hachnas Sefer Torah, dancing, music, torches, the works. Then comes that Shabbos, they take out the new Sefer Torah to Lain. The owner of the original Sefer Torah makes a macha. He says, until now, you Lain from my Sefer Torah. You've been Lain from my Sefer Torah for 25 years. I have a chazakah that my sefer gets used for the mitzvah. You can't go along and take that away from me. And therefore, you have no right to start laning from this new second sefer Torah. You're taking away my mitzvah. Zog the Darkei Moshe, nothing doing. Because Zog the Darkei Moshe, if you have a case where there are five sefer Torah in the Aron Kodesh, and nevertheless, the tzibur decides they're going to lean only from your Sefer Torah. Or the tzibur decides in Yom Kippur, this is the Sefer Torah that we use. So where the tzibur had a choice of five different svarim, and they chose yours, then we have a raya that the tzibur wanted to give you this mitzvah. Once that's done, however many times, it's yours, it can't be taken away. But if there's only one Sefer Torah in the shul, the fact that they used your Sefer Torah every year doesn't mean anything. Doesn't show they were giving it to you. Doesn't show they're being mavater and deciding they cannot bring in another Sefer Torah at any point in the future. So therefore, Zuck the Dark and Moshe, where there was no choice, there, regardless of how long this person had a chazaka, regardless how long his Sefer Torah was used to do the mitzvah, the chazaka would not apply. Mashahenkein, if you have a situation where there were two, there were more Sefer Torah, and the tzibur was makbid, Yom Kippur is this person's, or this Yom Tov, they're going to lean from this Sefer Torah. So there, where the tzibur, having a choice, specifically went out of their way and is giving this mitzvah at this time to this particular person, they were ready, we would have a chazaka, and once that's done, you would not be able to take away that mitzvah from the person who was zoichin. So only I think if there was a kepeda. If they had two sefer Torah and they just had a rotation, or they every other week or every 3 weeks, then you don't have a hoichacha that they wanted to give one of them anything. It's just we have two. This is how it gets divided. However, if you have a situation where there are two sefer Torah and Yom Kippur their makbe, this is the one that gets used. They don't rotate. This person is a, then already I can hear there's a chazaka because then they consciously went out. Oh, so no. So then you can argue if there's one, there's only one Mehudah Dika Sefer, then you can say that we didn't have a choice. You know, for Mehudah Dika Sefer, this is the only one that we had. It's only when there's a conscious decision, as the Nesivos points out, whenever, and you know, going back to this Chazaka Sheyesh Mataina, it's not enough just to do it. You have to show that the reason why they gave it to you is not just because no one made a macha, no one cared. If you have a shul where no one, you know, the gab, they just at random take out a Sefer Torah. You're not going to have a chazaka because punk your saver came out three times in a row. It has to be clear that the tzibur consciously they wanted to give this to you. You can't take it if they didn't give it to you. But in a case where we are two sefer Torah, but they bedafka, they as a covet to you, they gave you Yom Kippur, they gave you Rosh Hashanah, whatever it may be, there was no rotation, they're already, it's very yitzhak, and there will be a chazaka. And as long as the sefer Torah, as long as the sefer Torah is in good condition, you will have that chazaka. Okay, certainly if the chazaka is there was an oinus, so in regular dine mamunus, if the reason why you didn't make a macha is the fellow had a gun to your head, so he's going to beat you up, so that is not a chazaka. If the whole issue would mean the lemicha because he didn't complain, if he was nenas and could not complain, there would be no chazaka. Now that being said, your first example, if he was a supporter of the shul, and therefore they made a decision that his support was worth, the amount of financial support was worth giving him this mitzvah, then I'm not so sure that that's called an itis. Then he is essentially buying the chazaka. He is giving enough money that people are willing to give him this chos, this kavod, and then it is yitachin that this chazaka would remain. Oh, so that we'll get to. That we'll get to in a minute. Because that's really talking about the next case. So we have, according to the Mordechai, is we have this yisoy that if there's a mitzvah that's done regularly, that tzibur consciously allowed one person to do it, where they specifically said it's yours for life, or whether it was just understood from the fact that they gave it to you regularly, there you would have a chazaka, and this cannot be taken away from you. What happens if you give it up on your own? You miss your opportunity to do the mitzvah. The example that you're referring to is where a person had a chazaka, he is the one that donated the shemen or the neiros for the Beis Medrash. It was a big schos. People would actually buy the rights to give the oil or the fuel for the candles for keeping the Beis Medrash light. So a person had this chazaka. He did it year after year. He lost his money. He was not able to go ahead and continue providing the candles, providing the shemen for the Beis Knesses. Because he wasn't able to continue, the shul had to find another donor. They found another donor who went ahead and they supported the shul. Until one fine day, the original donor made his money back. As soon as he made his money back, he came back to the tzibur and said, "This is my mitzvah." The new donor said, "It was your mitzvah. But since you 3 years ago you stopped donating money, at that point they gave it to me, and now it's my mitzvah." So over here the halacha is that if you have a mitzvah and you give it up, you stop doing it even one time. Once you gave it up, it's gone. You don't retain it. However, if it's an oinus, if you didn't give it up voluntarily, you simply weren't, you were unable to fulfill the mitzvah, then you do not lose your chazakah. And then the moment the oinus passes, you have the right to reclaim your title, to reclaim your mitzvah, and go back and continue doing it. So in this particular case, where the fellow could not afford to make this donation, it was an oinus. Later on, if he gets his money back, then he will be able to reclaim his position. That's called an oinus. Now, there is a fair amount of discussion of defining what this oinus is. How poor does he have to be? Now, let's say until now he was a very wealthy fellow who's jetting around the world, fancy car, fancy vacation, and he was a baltstucker. Now already he lost his money. He's not starving. He has a few dollars. But because he's not so wealthy, he doesn't feel secure enough to go ahead and to make this kind of large donation. He has other moistis. He has other obligations. How do we define the oinus here? So the Ranach in Mayim Amuk and Siman Ayin says that as long as was yoyer l'nechasov, his level of affluence is such that people typically would not make this kind of donation, that's called an oinus. Even though in theory he could have, eaten peanut butter for breakfast, lunch, and supper, he could have managed. But if in the financial situation that he's in, the norm would be for a person not to do it, he would not to push himself, that is enough for an oinus. You don't need mamish an oinus of nefashos. And Ranach says you'd be able to reclaim your chazakah afterwards. However, there are a number of tshuvas. It's hard to say it's a machlokes because they don't address this case directly. But there are a number of tshuvas that seem to have a fairly high bar for the oinus. There's one actually interesting case of a tzepichus dvash. There was a chazan for many years. He was a shliach tzibur. Vayihi hayoyim, they came to him one day and they offered him the rabbonus. Okay, so now he has a choice. Do you want to be a rav? Do you want to be a chazan? Apparently, he couldn't be both at the same time. So he became a rav. He gave up his shteler as a chazan. Now, I'm not sure what happened afterwards, why there was a fight. Apparently, he wanted his chazanas back. I'm presuming if it's a steer, he must have gotten fired as a rav. But now he claimed, I want my original chazaka back. So the tzibur said, no, you gave it up voluntarily. Who asked you? You had a choice to be a rav or a chazan. And he said, it's called an oinus. So the tzibur v'zvash said, nothing doing. He says, it's the Mishnah Pirkei always tells you that the snayas a rabbonus. Person should not be running after a rabbonus position. So therefore, to give up a mitzvah to become a rav, he says that's not called an oinus. That's your decision. That's your hachlata. That's not an oinus, and you will lose your chazaka. In a similar case. Well, like all chazakos or tnoim, if you made such a tanai at the time, perhaps. But again, who are you making the tanai with? The point is, you had a mitzvah. Were you an oinus, or did you give it up voluntarily? Yeah. Now, we're not attacking that you did something wrong. But it's voluntarily. So you're no longer an oinus. You do not retain that right. There are other cases. There was a fellow, it was another chazan who lived in a community. He was struggling for parnassah, so he moved out of town to get a better job. He moved out of town, so obviously he lost his shteler as a chazan. He wasn't in the community for the Yom Ne'eram. Later on, he moved back to town and he claimed his shteler. And he said, I moved out, I was forced to move out because I needed the money. So if he already, the place can say that this is not called an oinus. Oinus mamon is not a good oinus. And therefore, since he voluntarily moved out of town, he cannot afterwards come and reclaim shteler.